The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Then here we go on the Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Ray Allen. Ray engineers and produces this program, does such a great job. On the other side of the glass, we have to keep him there, well, just for aesthetic reasons. That's where the control room is located, so that's where Ray is. It is Tuesday, January the 9th. 2018. Hope the new year's gone well for you so far. Our live line number 790-2040. Very full hour as usual. And we're going to begin on the Buckmaster Show live line. Another challenger wants to take Arizona Secretary of State Michelle Reagan's job in the 2018 election. With us on the live line is Mark Robert Gordon. He is a Phoenix-based federal election and voting rights attorney who will be facing off against State Senator Katie Hobbs, a Democrat from Phoenix, in the Democratic primary in August for Secretary of State. Let's welcome Mr. Gordon. Now, Mark, how are you?
Very fine, sir. How are you today?
Doing very well. Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself and our listeners and why you want to become the Arizona Secretary of State.
I'd be delighted to. Thank you for the opportunity. So I'm an Arizona native. I grew up in public schools, attending public schools here in Phoenix. My dad was a disabled World War II veteran. My mom was a public school teacher. I went on to Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs, Columbia Law School, and Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And while at Columbia, I first became involved in election protection work as a volunteer at first for the League of Women Voters, then several other not-for-profit organizations, and eventually got into a period of opening and starting up and heading and running election protection and voting rights programs throughout the country. I set up a law office eventually in Washington, D.C. I heard you say Phoenix-based. That's true. I live in Phoenix. I do federal law. I do it out of my D.C. office, and I get called and have been for a few decades now by political parties, candidates, not-for-profit organizations around the country to make sure that voting systems are working correctly, that voting rights are protected and are in compliance with federal regulations and the Voting Rights Act, and make sure that people's opportunity to vote is protected. Here in Arizona, for the last 4.5 or so years, I've been the chair, the election integrity chair for the Maricopa County Democratic Party. I sit with the county chair and credential our observers to go in to the polls, make sure that the elections are working correctly, and troubleshoot any problems that happen. I've run boiler rooms around the country, but here in Arizona, as I said, with the Maricopa County Democratic Party, I'm the one who has been sending our people into the polls, and eventually the county's attorneys, if need be, we prepare the lawyers to go to court. I also serve as the co-chair of the Arizona Democratic Law Professionals Association, which does a lot of voting rights and election protection work. And when our new county recorder in Maricopa County came in this year, he built a bipartisan transition team to bring him into office. It had Republicans, it had Democrats, it even had a Libertarian, all former or current election officials of some sort, and some other important people in town. But he realized he needed an election specialist, and I'm humbled to say he brought me in for that purpose, to bring him up to speed with best practices in the country, to come up with reforms that are needed in that office and in the system in general in Arizona. So the point being, this is what I do. And I look at the Secretary of State's office, and the Secretary of State's office today is not like it was when I was growing up, or for that matter, under any other Secretary of State, Republican or Democrat, since until now.
Where has Michelle Reagan dropped the ball, in your opinion?
Well, first, she's made it into a partisan office. She's also made it a non-unifying office. It's a very divisive office. She's gone to war with all 15 county recorders, Republicans and Democrats. That doesn't matter which party they were, but she it's been well publicized that the county recorders are not very happy with her. And that's just not a good way to begin an administration. It's not a good way to run an administration. It's one thing to have leadership and offer to take things in a new direction, but leadership is also about working with people and getting people to come aboard and persuading people. And that's been my experience as a lawyer, as a negotiator in business. That's what I do, and that's what a good business person should be doing, and she didn't do that. So that was a bad tone that she set. But look, I mentioned all my work for a quarter century now around the country in voting rights and election protection. Arizona's been one of the worst offenders. There was a reason why we were under federal preclearance until a U.S. Supreme Court decision took all the jurisdictions, including Arizona, out until new data came in. There's a reason. And when you have the chief elections officer of this state, now I think the 14th largest state in the country, when you have someone like that who failed to send out 200,000 election pamphlets, that's so people can make an informed voting rights decision, know where to go to vote, know when the election is happening, know what is on the ballot, and see opposing sides so that they can make informed decisions. That's a voting rights issue. And 200,000 people. So there's that, the fourth most populous county in the country, Maricopa County. Fourth most populous county in the country, her office touted the plan ahead of time to reduce polling sites for the March 2016 election from 205 sites down to 60. And then afterwards, she personally was like a deer caught in the headlights of her own policy failure and her office blamed voter confusion for the six-hour lines in Maricopa County.
Let me ask you about your qualifications to be governor, because people may not realize it, but we do not have a lieutenant governor in this state, and the Arizona Secretary of State is number two. Basically, the number two elected official, first in line to succeed the governor if he or she were to leave office early. Are you ready to be governor?
And we've had a history of that.
Yes, we had. We have. Yeah.
Five of the last nine, I believe, mm-hmm. Secretaries of State, whether from impeachment or resignation, what have you. We've had a history here.
Yep.
Look, I have been, though I have not held elected office, I have been involved. I got involved very young in high school. I started volunteering for my first campaign in high school, volunteered for a few more campaigns. And while still in high school, I was placed on staff of Carolyn Warner's run for governor. I was a volunteer coordinator for her. So I have a long history in this. I worked for Mo Udall on Capitol Hill for a short period of time. I have advised, whether legal advice or strategic advice, everyone from presidential candidates on down to local school boards across the country. I've been involved in my political party here in Arizona. But in addition to that, these officials, these candidates have called on me for policy advice. As I mentioned before, I have a Master's of Public Administration from Harvard Kennedy School of Government. I have lectured on policy issues with a wide breadth of topics. And I have served people in the background for now decades, working in different areas. So I believe the knowledge base is there. I believe the respect for bipartisanship and willing to reach out to the other side and hear what the other side has to say, I believe that's an important skill and trait that I developed and taught in my career, but it's also something that's sorely missing.
All right.
Right now.
We've only got about a minute left with Democrat Mark Robert Gordon, who is going to be facing off against Senator Katie Hobbs. To get to the battle with Michelle Reagan, presumably that Michelle Reagan, that is, if she wins her primary, how do you separate yourself from Senator Hobbs? Is that you saying experience will be the difference there? Is that what you're going to contend?
Well, we're both running for Secretary of State. What you brought up, Governor, before. We're running for Secretary of State.
I'm sorry.
Governor, not Attorney General.
Not Governor.
No, that's okay. That's okay, but I want to make that distinction.
Yes.
I believe my qualifications, having worked in this field for 25 years, I'm friends with Katie. Hobbs. I like her personally, but this is not a this is not about that. This is about who is best skilled for this job, and this is what I've done for 25 years. And I've also got to say, the system is not working right now for the people. The Secretary of State's job, the governor's job, whatever it is, it's about serving and protecting the people. And right now we have the parties jabbering at one another, not really talking. And I think we need to get back to that. Everyone loved Rose Mofford when she was Secretary of State, Democrat or Republican. And, you know, other Betsy Bayless, you know, on the Republican side, she was very respectful of the other side. She looked to serve all of Arizona.
Yes.
We need to get back. We need to get back to that. And if this is not working with ladder climbing, with people going into jobs just because it's the next opportunity, then we need to try something else. And I think the citizens of Arizona have an opportunity to elect somebody to this important office that has it uniquely has the skills and the background for this office. And to be fair to what you just asked about prior, the prior question, if the occasion arises to become governor, who is prepared for that? And I am fully prepared for that challenge and for that opportunity.
All right. Mark Robert Gordon, a Democrat seeking the office of Arizona Secretary of State. Your website, please.
It's www.markrobertgordon.com. That's M-A-R-K, Robert, R-O-B-E-R-T, Gordon is G-O-R-D-O-N.com. MarkRobertGordon.com.
Thank you very much. Nice talking with you.
And thank you for your time. I appreciate it, Bill.
Thanks a lot. All right. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by Green Things, our friends over at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Check out greenthingsaz.com. Also, they have terrariums and mimosas. That's going to be a fun event coming up from 10 a.m. to noon this Saturday out at Green Things. Free event, should be fun. Build your own terrarium at Green Things. Be right back with Shelley Fishman, who has given me a giant thumbs up. We'll be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Wednesday, a newsmaker interview with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, plus our newest contributor to the program, he's Bill Doley of Archaeology Southwest. Wednesday, during the noon hour, on Buckmaster on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice.
Shelly Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor professional. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
And we're going to talk to the gentleman that we enjoy speaking with about money every Tuesday at 12:20, certified financial planner Shelly Fishman. Planner is a word that jumps out at me, Shelly, and a lot of people just don't do enough planning, but some do. Some really are very conscientious, and they save up for their retirement, and they perhaps never really understand how much they're going to need.
Well, that's true, Bill. And one of the things you and I were chatting about during the break was planning. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me as the intro music was coming on and that wonderful voice, we have the ability to discuss what are you going to do next year, the year mm-hmm. after, or how long you want to keep doing this.
Right.
And the reason we have the ability to do that is because some years ago, we decided that it was very important for us to be able to afford to be able to make those plans. If you can't afford the lifestyle that you want, then it's much harder to understand that you can realize whatever the alternatives you may be looking at may be. What we know, Bill, and this is a statistic that has gotten somewhat better in the past 3 or 4 years, but not a lot better, is that nearly 50% of the American population has not saved for retirement or has not saved in any significant way for their retirement. We know that close to 50% of the population has some investments in equities or other investments besides their homes. Only 50%. So that what you're left with as you get closer and closer to the time that you don't want to be working, mm-hmm. 40 hours a week or whatever it is for the rest of your life, is you're left without alternatives or without satisfactory alternatives. Now, a lot of people count on their homes. They count on the value of their homes going up and then somehow liquidating cash from those properties to help fund or supplement Social Security. Now, Social Security is going to provide some amount of money to virtually all of us, but it's not a lot of money.
It's a modest amount.
It's a modest mm-hmm. amount. If you can grab a couple of $100,000 out of the equity in your home, that might be very, very helpful. But will it provide the kind of cash flow you need to maintain your lifestyle? What's prompted this discussion is over the past week, and it's because we're in January and, people begin to look at these kind of planning cycles. There have been a good number of articles published just in the past couple of days about how you turn your savings into cash flow and what's the most the easiest and most dependable way to do that, but also in a way that recognizes that we're all living longer, not all of us, but a lot of us are living longer, and therefore the amount of time we have to consider remaining liquid and being able to pull that money out becomes a longer and longer target. So one of the articles was talking about, well, if you have a couple of $1 million in retirement savings, here's a good way to do it. And I scratched my head and said, wait a second. If you've got a couple of $1 million in retirement savings, while, yes, you do have a chore that you have to make some decisions about, but you ain't necessarily got a problem.
No.
You know, you've got a solvable set of conditions that, that you need to work toward.
But some people, you were saying like half the population of America has, it's in the thousands, very low, not 100,000, but we're talking about
40 or 50,000.
Yeah,
maybe.
Right. For retirement.
Right. So the question then becomes, you know, let's say you've done a fairly decent job and you've got $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, which my guess is for many of our listeners is kind of a realistic sum, both to aim for and when they approach 65, 66, 67 years old, is to say, well, that's what we've got now. You know, you get that from a combination of things, maybe a Roth IRA, maybe an IRA that you've been putting away, maybe a 401k or other such tax qualified retirement plan. So the question is, how do I get the money out of there in such a way that it continues to remain available to me for the next 20 or 25 or 30 years? And you'll get no uniformity or unanimity of opinions on how to do that. I was reading an article just this morning where somebody suggested, well, you can annuitize all or part of that, by which they mean you can buy a product, an annuity, that will give you some guarantees in exchange for cash. In other words, the insurance companies that write annuities don't do it for free, but guarantees might cost you a point, maybe 2 points a year, and in exchange for paying the piper, you get a guaranteed amount of cash that you cannot outlive. That's one way of doing it, and a good rule of thumb when thinking, well, how much will that get me for the rest of my life? Think 5%. Could be a little less, could be a little bit more. There are, you know, ways of fine-tuning that for inflation and that kind of thing. But if you've got, so let's say $500,000 in an annuity, you're going to grab about $2,500 a year from that. Am I doing the 10% is 50? No, $25,000 a year. I'm sorry, $25,000 a year in annuitizing $500,000. Now, $25,000 on the part, you know, on when you add that to Social Security, which may be another $15,000 or $16,000 or $20,000, that gives you about a $45,000 income. And if that's the income that you're used to having, if that's the income that can maintain your lifestyle or the lifestyle that you think you might want during retirement, you know, you're most of the way there. It's usually not a good idea to annuitize more than about half your savings, because once you annuitize it, you lose the liquidity for lump sum. You lose the liquidity you may need to take care of emergencies that come up.
Then there's the reverse mortgage.
Oh, I'm not even allowed to talk about
that. Okay, all right.
My broker-dealer won't let me talk about that.
Okay.
However, it is something I believe that the rules have been liberalized somewhat, and if you're interested in that, there's some government websites that you can go to that can, in fact, help you analyze whether or not that's a good idea or not a good idea for you personally. It may or may not be a good idea. Don't dismiss it out of hand. But the other question then becomes, how much of my remaining savings in an IRA or even just invested savings, can I safely take out each year and still have some assurance that I won't outlive that
right.
money?
Right. That's a very key point.
And there are lots of guidelines there. Part of those guidelines are dependent upon how you've allocated that money mm-hmm. and when bad things happen. In other words, if we get a market crash mm-hmm. At the beginning of your retirement and you were well invested in equities and that market crash causes your investments to go down and you need to be drawing from those investments early on in your retirement, then that's a bad thing. So allocation of those investments is very, very important. I'm seeing many advisors right now taking a kind of contrarian view toward allocation. Instead of the 60 or 70% income-producing allocations, which are bonds essentially, and 30 or 40% equities, I'm seeing the flip of that. People saying, go 60% equities and 40% or 35% bonds, 5% cash. However, you got to make me a promise. And the promise is if the market goes down, you kind of cut back on your lifestyle a while until the market recovers. So that takes some discipline.
Oh, yeah.
So there's lots of strategies. They should all be discussed with an advisor before you embark on any of them. Don't do it yourself. You know,
right.
Usually a consultation is for free, and you should use people's expertise in that area.
Thank you, Shelley. We will look for Shelley's work at buckmastershow.com. That is the link to Shelley, and he returns phone calls in a very timely manner. Thanks, Shelley. Have a great week.
You too, Bill.
All right.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of Securities America or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor in private practice here in Tucson. Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through PFG Advisors. Securities America and PFG Advisors are separate entities.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. And improved mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our three new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition. We're on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, with live streaming. That's our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. This portion of the program presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. It's a very pleasant area of the southwestern United States. It's a lovely environment. You can explore historic Silver City, do some hiking, go up to the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Time for a road trip early in the new year. Check out southwestnewmexico.org for the full listing of great places to stay and many recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County. Welcome now to the show. David Layton is with us. Mr. Layton is the columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, who writes about local history. It's a column called Street Smarts. He's been doing it for about 6 years. Street Smarts is based on the origin of street names in Tucson. David, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate
and the it. Column appears now monthly, correct?
Right. It was a weekly column for about the first 3.5 years. It comes out the first Monday of the month in the Arizona Daily Star.
And there's no shortage of street names.
No, there's definitely not. There's somewhere, from what I've been told, about 4,000 to 5,000 different street names in greater Tucson, if you include like Oral Valley and places like that.
When did we start putting street names? Was it all the way back to Presidio days? Or where do you trace the history of our street names to?
Well, the earliest known map that has street names on it is the 1862 Ferguson map is what it's called. So in 1862, after the Union soldiers came into Tucson, taking it from the Confederate soldiers, they surveyed the town and did a survey, and the streets were all named in Spanish at that point. Mm-hmm. For example, Congress Street was originally called Calle de la Alegría, which is Street of Happiness, or Street of Joy. And so that's the earliest known map of Tucson with its street names on it. I recently came across some information at the clerk of the Pima County Board of Supervisors office that in 1870, a map was drawn by the clerk of the Board of Supervisors named F.H. Goodwin, and the streets were put in English at that point. So the first known map, unbeknownst to most people, is actually 1870, not 1872.
And then, but some of the Spanish names remain, like Granada.
Well, Granada came out later
on. Oh, it was later. I was assuming that might have been one of the Spanish names that stuck.
No, the original 1862 Ferguson map only shows about five street names on it.
Okay.
You've got, you know, like Calle Real, for example, Royal Street, mm-hmm. Which is now Main Street, because mm-hmm. that street was Tucson's first street. The very first street in Tucson was
Main.
Yeah, it was actually originally called Camino Real, or the mm-hmm. Royal Road, mm-hmm. And it's because the road actually ran ultimately from Veracruz, Mexico, all the way up to Tucson.
Really?
Yeah, it's the oldest road in Tucson. There were several Camino Reals in, there's two that go to Texas, one New Mexico, one mm-hmm. into California. So there were several Royal Roads, but Tucson actually had its own Royal Road, and that later became Main. What's now a Main Avenue, I guess we call it Main Avenue now. And that's Tucson's first street.
David Layton is with us, Mr. Layton, writing about street column. Well, his column is Street Smarts.
Correct.
About the origin of street names in Tucson. 790-2040. If any of you have a question about any of our street names, David would be more than happy to tackle that question. You're going to be appearing on the Travel Channel coming up. What is that all about?
That's correct. We actually did the filming a few months back. There's a show called The Dead Files. It's a very popular show on the Travel Channel. Many of the listeners will probably be familiar with The Dead Files out there. It's basically kind of somewhat like Ghost Hunters, but a little more in depth, in my opinion. It's on the Travel Channel. I was interviewed about the Sahuarito Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Many people in Sahuarita are not aware that the fact that the town is actually misspelled. It actually derives its name from the Sahuarito Ranch.
Hmm.
And the ranch itself derives its name from – Sahuarito means little saguaro. Sahuarito with an A at the end, if my understanding is correct, in Spanish does not actually mean anything. There's only one version of that. So it means little saguaro, and it derives from the fact that along the road from Tubac to Tucson, there was a odd-shaped little saguaro, and you knew when you got to that point, you were, I think it was like 20 miles to Tucson or something, whatever the number. It was kind of a marker.
Huh.
And eventually a former Union soldier came there and set up a little ranch and a stage station so people would stop there. They could get grub on their way between Tucson and Tubac. And during the 1800s, Tubac was a very important town. I mean, it was probably the second most populous town in Arizona, or in the Arizona Territory at that point. So we basically, I sat down and did some filming with the Travel Channel or the production company.
Mm-hmm.
And that show will be March 3rd. March 3rd on the Travel Channel. I believe The Dead Files comes out, I think it's 8 p.m. Tucson time, but it's March 3rd, The Dead Files. I'm filmed on that show. There's a few other, I think, historians as well who were interviewed about the area.
It's funny, too, not only about the street names, but the way we pronounce street names. I'm thinking of Ina, Houghton, which both Houghton and Ina are actually mispronounced.
Correct. I've actually spoken with Bradley Houghton, who's the great-grandson of William and Florence Houghton, and he stated that it is pronounced Houghton. He no longer lives in Arizona. The family no longer resides in Arizona.
So he doesn't have to be endure hearing all of the
incorrect pronunciation of his family's last name. Yeah,
okay.
It is definitely Houghton.
Yeah. Ina is not Ina.
Ina Road is correctly pronounced Ina Road. Ina Giddings. there's several street names that are commonly mispronounced. When I try to correct people, it's kind of funny because they're like, are you not from here? And I'm like, no, I've done the research. I know it's Ina Road. I think there's a little alley near the U of A. Most people call it Jacobus Avenue. Mm-hmm. Kind of runs into Tucson High School. It's actually called Jacobus Avenue. So Jacobus Avenue is how you pronounce that one. I spoke to the grandson of P.N. Jacobus, who was actually one of the first mayors of Tucson, or one of the first 10 mayors, maybe.
What about Plummer?
Plummer is a name for Nathaniel Plummer.
Mm.
That is correct. It's not Plumer. I know I used to make that same mistake. I used to call it Plummer.
Plummer.
When I first came here as a little child back in the 80s.
David, I'm quickly running out of time, and obviously I've got to have you back on again because we could spend actually a whole hour just talking with you.
It would be love to do that.
A quick question, just curious. I've always been curious about it. When a new street is named, what is the process? Is there some kind of a board that approves that, or how does that work?
Well, and I think it would depend on how you do it and who you do it. Most street names now are being named by developers or the engineering firms. And I believe they basically draw up the plat map, or the plat map is drawn up by the engineering firm. And then basically they come up with names, however they come up with them, and they submit them to, I think it's either the city or county, one of the local agencies, and then they approve them. So basically they check to make sure there's not another street with the same name. They make sure the word is not offensive. If it's in Spanish, they check to make sure it's not offensive as well. Stuff like that.
So. All right. David, I'm going to have to run. When is the next column going to appear?
Next column should be February, the first Monday in February.
And do you know what the topic will be?
No, I'm not 100% sure what it's going to be, but it'll be on street names.
What's your favorite street name?
Oh, man, that's tough.
Give me a quick one.
You know, I like ML King Jr. Way, Martin Luther King Way.
Uh-huh.
It's the story is very interesting. If any of the readers want to check it out, just Google Martin Luther King and Street Smarts, and you'll hear about when Martin Luther King came to Tucson. It's a very interesting story.
And Street Smarts, there's a place to with all your columns?
Be on Tucson.com, the Arizona Daily Star website.
Thank you very much, David. Sure. Great to talk with you.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our three new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Bon Voyage Travel's 2018 Travel Showcase is back. With over 30 travel companies to share their knowledge and a room full of travel professionals, you can't go wrong. Planning the perfect vacation takes time and involves quite a bit of research. Bon Voyage Travel is here to simplify the process and ensure you always receive the best value. Join us February 3rd at La Paloma from noon to 4 p.m. There will be presentations, exclusive offers, prizes, and a show floor giving you the opportunity to have a one-on-one consultation with us. Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Arts Report, sponsored by Fox Tucson Theater, presenting illusionist Michael Howell on Saturday, January the 13th. This all-ages downtown second Saturday event's free to the public, with performances starting at 7 and 8 p.m. Then, February 6th, spend a night with Janis Joplin. Celebrate the musical journey and iconic influences of this legend, played by acclaimed singer and actor Kelly McIntyre. Then, for all the jazz fans, Fox Tucson Theater thrilled to host three Tucson Jazz Festival 2018 performances. To purchase tickets to see the Hot Sardines January 12th, Diane Shore Quartet on the 18th, the Mingus Dynasty on the 19th of January, go to the Fox website, and that is foxtucson.com. Let's welcome now the long time, nearly 30 years, Margaret Regan has been writing about the arts for the Tucson Weekly. She's also the author of two prize-winning books on immigration. The latest came out in 2015, still getting quite a bit of buzz. That book is titled Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire. Margaret, how are you, and Happy New Year to you.
Oh, thank you, Bill. I'm very happy. You know, I took a nice long vacation over the holidays.
So yeah, I know you did.
Yeah, nothing in print at this time.
Well, that's fine, because there will be plenty in print, starting with the couple of stories in the January 18th issue of Tucson Weekly, and you've been busy preparing those items, and that one of them entailed a visit, I believe, to Tohono O'Toole Gallery.
Yeah, I was up there yesterday, and, you know, as always, that's a beautiful spot to visit. Just, you know, exquisite desert landscaping outside and all these trails you can get lost on. They have a very interesting show. You know, the curator there, James Schaub, is doing a great job. He's an artist himself. He's been the curator for a couple of years now. So it's called Desert Corridors, and it got started in an interesting way. The docents at Tohono O'Toole put up cameras, infrared-type cameras, through their desert landscaping. You know, it's a pretty large place.
Yeah.
To photograph animals walking by at night and by day, to get an idea on where are the migration paths of the animals. And they came up with great stuff, you know, pictures of coyotes and javelinas walking through. And James got the idea to do a show kind of based on that. What are the desert corridors that animals cross, and, you know, what makes them travel through certain places, and what makes human beings travel through the desert in certain places? Put out a call to artists with those criteria, and got an amazing, really interesting body of work coming in. A couple people, of course, wrote about, or, you know, made art about the migrants dying in the desert. Others made art about our rivers, particularly the Santa Cruz, which isn't really much of a river. You know, it used to be a perennial river. One piece that really knocked me out is a woman from Douglas, originally Monica Durazo, great-grandchild of immigrants who walked across northern Mexico to get to Agua Prieta during the Mexican Revolution. She was a humane borders worker who used to go out into the desert with a truck and put water in water stations for the migrants. And that's like 10 years ago that she did this or more. She says she's still devastated by the things she saw. she did this big, very abstract installation. You might not know really what it's about until you learn what she has to say about it. Great big pods, sort of big paper things. They almost look like desert rocks. And piled up from the floor to the ceiling, very large pods, very large balls. They could be the desert rocks, but they could also be skulls. They could be bodies of people crouching. And some of those pods she has colored red to note, you know, the many deaths of the migrants in the desert. They're really very haunting works and really quite beautiful.
That's there'll be some, I think, 22 artists, and that's up through February 7th at the Tohono O'Toole Gallery.
Right.
The show is called Desert Corridors. And that piece is going to be in the January 18th issue of the Tucson Weekly. And you've also been working on something for the Etherton Gallery, and they have actually, that show has a soft opening, I believe, tonight.
Right. You know, their shows are always so great. This is a big show of three important photographers, opens today, and there's a big opening reception Saturday night, and, you know, they always have fun receptions. Big crowds come on a Saturday night to see the things. This one has three photographers. Two of them are from Mexico, and one is Japanese, and all three are pretty well-known photographers who do have work in the permanent collection of the Center for Creative Photography. The Japanese man, Masao Yamamoto, does mostly very delicate pieces about nature, and they're gelatin silver prints, which means they're black and white film, but he also does handwork on them, too. And he's giving a free lecture on Friday afternoon at 5:30 at the Center for Creative Photography, which is, you know, a wonderful collaboration that the Center does with Etherton, where we get to go to these free lectures by really world-famous photographers. The other two are a woman named Graciela Iturbide, who's a photographer that Terry has often shown. She does these fabulous black and white photos, often of indigenous people in Mexico. And one of her most famous photos is a picture of, I think it's a Tarahumara woman in the desert. But the way she's been photographed, it looks like she has wings. There are these sort of pieces of rock behind her. And it's called Desert Angel, and it's a photo that's been reprinted so many times. And the third person is Rodrigo Moya. I'm not as familiar with his work, but he was a journalist and photographer also. He got to photograph Che Guevara in Cuba. He did a lot of big, important work, you know, earlier. You know, he's an older man now, but was all over South America doing very interesting stuff.
And that show, again, the soft opening for that is today. There's going to be the opening reception Saturday night. That's all those Etherton events, the openings, kind of like the place to be in downtown.
It is. It's a good Saturday night activity, and then you can hang out downtown and go to a restaurant if you want. It's a fun thing to do.
Quick plug about dance.
Yes. Okay, Momix, if you're familiar with Palabolas, which a lot of dance fans are, they come to Centennial Hall pretty regularly. Momix is kind of a spin-off from Palabolas, and the guy who founded it, Moses Pendleton, he used to be with Palabolas, and he was a founder of Palabolas, too. So they do the same kind of very inventive, playful, theatrical kind of movement. What's interesting about the show they're having on Thursday night, January 18th, is that it's called Opus Cactus, and it is inspired by our own Sonoran Desert. It was originally commissioned by Ballet Arizona years ago, 15 years ago, and it was a shorter piece, but Pendleton has reworked the thing, and now it's a full-length work, probably about an hour, of all kinds of movement of dancers, you know, pretending to be rattlesnakes, dancers being butterflies, dancers being flowers that open in the desert, but always in just this beautiful fashion. And their dancers are known for being extraordinarily muscular and strong and gymnastic as well.
That's going to be an interesting piece. That's called Opus Cactus.
Yes.
But it's going to be part of that program Thursday, the 18th of January, 7:30 in the evening at Centennial Hall. Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you, Margaret. Off to a good start here in 2018, and all the best to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot. The Buckmaster Show Arts Report is presented by Fox Tucson Theater. They've got so much going on in January, including Saturday, the 13th. That's this Saturday. Illusionist Michael Howell. It's a free event as part of Downtown Second Saturday over at the Fox. Get some. Actually, they're a 7 and an 8 o'clock performance. Then the February 6th, spend a night with Janis Joplin, acclaimed singer and actor Kelly McIntyre portraying the famous performer. Then the Tucson Jazz Festival, they've got three events at the Fox. You can purchase your tickets now to see Hot Sardines, the 12th of January, the Diane Shore Quartet, January 18th, the Mingus Dynasty, January 19th. For more information, to purchase tickets and to view the full Fox Theater spring schedule, visit foxtucson.com. Coming up this afternoon, Mike Check with Mike Shaw and Ray Allen. Together, they put together a wonderful and entertaining and informative hour. Then Wake Up Tucson tomorrow from 6 to 9. Then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you. Among other guests tomorrow, City Councilman Paul Cunningham. We'll see how the new year is treating Mr. Cunningham. That and more tomorrow. On behalf of Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.